I'm James May. I own Broken Century Games here in Grand Forks, North Dakota.
What kind of games are we talking about here? I think of card games, I think of board games, I think of video games, and that industry has gotten so specific now that each one can almost sustain themselves. So which of those three, or outside of those three, do you do?
We do board games, card games, dice games. We do a lot of wargaming miniatures. So you are a hobby game. You buy the parts and pieces of your army, you put them together, you paint them, and then you hit the battlefield and play.
So Warhammer?
Yep, so we do Warhammer and Bolt Action, Age of Sigmar. We've got Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, Guild Ball, Rune Wars, X-Wing Armada, Legion, and probably half a dozen more I can't remember.
So we were talking a little bit earlier today about just your customer, and I kind of pontificated that it would be that end of college age, first part of young adult age when you got extra money and no kids and this and that, and you're saying not so much. It's a different demographic. So talk to me about your main demographic, but then also you go outside of that.
Yeah, our core demographic is 36 to 44, 45. Those, you know, adults with growing kids, you know, probably kids in the 4th to 9th grade, and they're just reliving those glory days of playing board games. But now the board games are so much better than what they were when I was a kid, you know, co-op games or versus games, and you really get to play those games with your kids, and that's kind of the core of who we market to is the parents with kids. Here's a way to reconnect with your kids and play in something where everybody's involved, no technology required, and, you know, access critical thinking and creativity.
That's the part that's amazed me so much, is that we've had such a surgence of iPad games and cell phone or smartphone games. But at the same time, the board game, the card game, the dice game market has grown astronomically too. Have you guys talked about that, about how odd that is, that the digital gaming has grown so much, but yet the old analog gaming has grown too?
Well, so in 2017, there were more games released in just a year than probably the preceding 15 years.
Wow.
Unique individual titles. So much stuff has come out. And a lot of it is that dichotomy of our current society of your cell phone is good for a 5-minute interaction, or, you know, here, let me play one more level on this or that. But it's a very solo activity. Even in an arena like this, where it's this e-gaming come together, everybody play, there's not a lot of conversation. There's not a lot of community and socializing that happens. And so they separate that off with, they then play board games and card games. They go home and play Cards Against Humanity and then just have a time together learning about themselves and other people. So they both kind of grew together in mass leaps.
You mentioned Cards Against Humanity. I think Catan or Catan. There's a lot of new titles that I've never heard of, I've never seen before. The old Monopoly and the old Life, do you guys even sell those anymore, or do they have to be co-branded with Star Wars and Pokemon in order to sell? Does anybody buy the old classics?
People do buy the old classics, but you can pick those up at Target and Walmart, and a small mom-and-pop shop, even a mid-size, can't compete with their pricing structure. So we usually only carry the co-branded stuff, like the Rick and Morty Monopoly and Clue, the Harry Potter Clue, which, for the record, is the best Clue. And those style of games, those IP-branded ones are the ones we usually sell. But people still look for them. We just usually push them to some of the better titles that help you branch into new, bigger games, you know, learn new mechanics.
It seems a big part of the board game or the gaming shops is to have a place for people to hang out. I'm thinking of Paradox Comics in Fargo, North Dakota. Even the Dragon's Horde across the street in Moorhead, when I was there one day, they even had a place for people to hang out. And I didn't really see anybody buying anything. And so it made me wonder, like, this is interesting strategy, but I get it. You know, you get people there, they're used to it, they're familiar with it. and they might not buy everything, buy anything every single time, but they do and this and that. Do you have that strategy, or is it only just games and they got to go, or how does that work in your strategy?
So we're devious and terrible business people. We do have a play space. We expect people to come in and play. We also rent the games so you can take them home and play them in your house, in your normal environment. So if you play pantsless wine drinking Monopoly Friday nights, I'm not judging, but you can do you. You have to have pants and you can't have wine in our store. But you can rent the game, take it home, play it. If you love it, sweet. You don't pay for the rental, you buy the game. The last thing we want is for you to have another copy of a game that you pull out every 6 months, and you play it, and you're like, ah, this game sucks. And then you throw it back in your closet. 6 months later, you're like, oh, we haven't played this in a while. And you hit it on the table, and you're like, ah, this sucks. We want that type of game that you pull out repetitively, and your kids are driving you insane to play. So we really foster that whole just play. You don't have to spend a ton of money. Like, it'll get you in the end. But we also talk about you have four kids, three kids, you know, it costs $10-$15 a head to go to the movies. $100 board game really isn't that bad. It's the cost of one movie once you get done buying popcorn and stuff.
That's an interesting model, the renting of the board game, you know. I mean, nobody ever balked at the renting of a movie. Nobody ever balked at, you know, the renting of a Nintendo system for the weekend and those types of things. I've never heard of renting board games before, but when you said it, man, that made so much sense, because you're right. I'll go buy it, and it'll sit in my closet, and we'll play it twice a year. We'll play it around Christmas time when everybody's around, maybe around Thanksgiving if we can catch everybody's attention, and maybe once during the summer during a four-day rain event where we're running out of things to do because the video games are getting bored or whatever the case might be. Do you get a decent amount? Well, you must if you're doing it, but talk to me about that rental a little bit, because I've never heard of that. Are other people doing that too? Or?
There's a few game stores across the country that do it, and it gets more and more every year. Our rentals are games like a couple, and they want to play Ticket to Ride, and they know they have family coming in, so they rent Ticket to Ride, they play that instead of spending the money to buy it. We also have a ton of people who just rent games to give them a try. Try it out in their own play space. It works really, really well. I've got five kids, four at home now, one's grown and moved out, and I'd have killed to have a place to rent a board game and just see how it fits with the family. It really, the whole point is get people to play. So.
What are the hottest games right now? You mentioned Cards Against Humanity. I've heard of that one. C-A-T-A-N, that Catan or Catan. I've heard of that one. I've actually played a few, but I can't remember what the names of them are. So just maybe, you know, a few of the titles that are popular last year and then this year.
Well, so the really awesome big one right now is Stuffed Fables. It is a Descent, or for those who've played really old games, HeroQuest. But it's designed for 7-ish year old and up. It's got a very Toy Story style mechanic. You're playing through levels trying to beat the bad guy, but as soon as the little girl wakes up, level's over. And it's a lot of fun. Self-contained, almost role-playing game in a box. Gloomhaven, I have to talk about. Like, huge, massive hit. Really expensive RPG in a box. You know, DM-less RPG in a box. Plays really well. Is absolutely wonderful. It's insanely hard to get a hold of. Other huge ones. Card game called Apocrypha. Your fragmented essence of a saint trying to save the world from the darkness as it's coming through. Spectacular playthrough. The guy who made it, he's got probably 10-15 years designing it, so he's really evened that out, made it everything it should be. Mansions of Madness, amazing. You guys are 1920s to 1940s era investigators trying to prevent Cthulhu's cult from bringing Cthulhu back into the world. That game's ran by an app, so you don't have quite as much learning curve on picking up the game. You get to start playing pretty fast, and the game escalates to a challenging level and just kind of hangs out there for a time. And then for card games, our two newest ones in that are really great are Light Seekers, which would be, I don't know, Pokemon and Magic had a love child.
Oh, I've been waiting for those two.
So it's a very low-key, light, ruthless game. It plays really fast, really quick. And then the other one is Red Flags. Imagine if Cards Against Humanity did a dating game. So you put positive things about the person and then one horrible negative thing. And then whoever's the single person for the round gets to pick which person they're going to go on a date with. So it's pretty hilarious.
A good friend of mine, he likes to play Pandemic. And then I went out to a game shop to get him a gift. And there's like 10 different Pandemics to choose from. I didn't know what to do. Is that game still popular?
Pandemic Legacy Season 2 just came out.
Okay.
I think earlier, Christmas time-ish. And it's won every award it's ever been put up for, including the Spiel Award, which is considered to be like, hey, here's the greatest games in the world right now. Yeah, Pandemic is still phenomenal. Still doing really well.
And that's a game where you're... You have to just stop an outbreak, right?
If you're lucky, it's only one. Most of the time, it's like 3 to 5. And you're like, ah, world is ending.
That's what my buddy says. He goes, every time it gets me how fun it is. And he goes, what, do you think you're going to win? No, you don't win. And anyway, he says it's just one of those you got to play. So what's the future of gaming look like? I ask this because you're a brick-and-mortar shop. Amazon is taking over every brick and mortar shop possible, but you've got the ability to do online sales. So I don't know if you do online sales, but you have the ability to. The thing that I've liked about what the gaming community has done is probably the best strategy against an Amazon, which is the experiential place. The you call it the pad or the play place or whatever it is. That to me, I thought was one of the better, I guess, strategies against the online, because the online cannot offer that. They cannot offer the brick and mortar. They cannot offer the experience of actually being there. And that still is a very big part of that. So the gaming, I think, has a real advantage over a lot of the brick and mortar shops. Have you thought about that as a business owner at all, how to kind of tackle that whole online brick and mortar? Are we selling? Are we not selling type of a thing?
Well, so we took our approach a lot differently. We're familiar with Amazon and how they function. So we approached the games manufacturers and said, hey, did you know you can make Amazon control their pricing? So instead of offering Settlers of Catan for $12, you can make them sell it at manufacturer's suggested retail price. So we attacked it that direction, so Amazon's pricing matched what we're able to sell it for. And then we're pretty obvious with our customers. They're paying partially for the experience. We have 5,110 items for sale in my shop right now, and I've played most of them. I think I'm at 70-some percent of all the games in my store I've already played. So when you come in, you've already played Pandemic, and you enjoy that cooperative portion, but you didn't like the trying to squelch all the fires. So I'd recommend a game like Zombicide, where it's, you know, 2 to 6 survivors in the zombie apocalypse right after the Black Plague. And so you're just trying to survive, kill the zombies, find the necromancer, and stick your sword through his head. So we have the ability to play the games. We have the ability to recommend if you like this one, you play this one. We can ask those questions. You don't get that online. Also, game manufacturers have noticed it. In the last 3 years... 2 years ago, there were 30% less game stores than there were 2 years before that. And manufacturers saw a definitive drop in their prices. Those evergreens, Ticket to Ride, Settlers of Catan, Pandemic, Monopoly, those always sell. But it's all the other games, like Iberia, which is Pandemic, just in 1815 Africa or something. Yeah. So that one doesn't sell quite as well until you stop in at my game store and I tell you, this is the difference between the two games, because I played them both. So game manufacturers are now really starting to support the brick and mortar and have different business models for online only, mm-hmm. mixed media, online and brick and mortar, and just brick and mortar. Amazon sells a lot. Magic World Series sells a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get Magic going and it sells so much more. So it's the social experience that makes board games what they are. And Amazon's got its place, just that's when you live out in the boonies and you don't have a game store to go to.
Well, I was going to say, there are some industries that are finding they're not being impacted by the online as much as others. And I for me, I thought gaming would be one of those because so much of it is that human connection, that experiential. Well, it's like in poker. Part of it is reading body language in order to have an advantage over people. You can't do that online. And so there's it's like I always say about print. Print will never die because we need things of record. We need physical. There might only be like one newspaper at the end of the world. That's fine, but it'll never die. Okay, I mean, we still have hieroglyphics on the Egyptian pyramids, for crying out loud, which is just a really amazing billboard at the end of the day. Okay, anything that you want to make sure we get in there, anything we might have missed? I like to give guests the final word of whatever direction they want to go so the question isn't framed or narrated by me. So the floor is yours, sir.
Play more games. The whole point is to sit down, have a human connection with them. A human. And to play a game, to just relax, put the cell phone down, and just be with another human, doing human things. And if you can't think of anything to do, play a game.